Hello, it's Richard Herring here. Welcome to my podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. And my stand-up tour is about to begin. Can I have my ball back? First stand-up tour in 6 years. Many of you just know me from the podcast. Don't know, I've done 14 or 15 stand-up tours in my own right. I'm a brilliant stand-up comedian, and can I have my ball back? I think it's my best show ever. That's what the audiences are saying. It's about testicular cancer, but it's funny because testicles are funny even though cancer isn't. I'm really pleased with it. I'd love you to come and see it. Bring your friends. Some of the shows selling really well, some of them selling really badly. It's a traditional Richard Herring tour. But here's where I'm going to be. 2nd of May, Thursday at the Luton Hat Factory. It's a small venue, but there are still tickets left. 3rd of May, I'm at the Bury Hedge End, which is near Southampton. That's looking more full, but still some availability. 8th of May, I'm at the Leicester Square Theatre. There's about 10 tickets left for that one, though I am back at the Leicester Square Theatre in June. And then I'm at St Albans on the 9th, Gloucester on the 10th, Chorley Little Theatre on the 11th. That's sold out, but you can join the waiting list. And then the 12th of May, I'm at Glasgow. Afternoon show sold out. Evening show, extra show, put on, still with tickets. And then there's lots more. Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs. And now, enjoy whatever podcast I've given you. It's free. It's all for you. If you want to pay me back, buy a book, come and see a show. That's all I've got to say to you. Love you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who's just been advised to do his belt up backstage. Richard Herring! Done up. It's done up. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. This is... it's done up. I've just undid it. I've been to the toilet. I undid it. I just did a wee. It's not... I was welcome to the Rich Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I was hanging around with the Baader Meinhof gang. They are not as much fun as that name makes them sound. I have to say they were quite unpleasant. Quite unpleasant people in many ways. They call it Rehlers. They call it Rehlerstappa. You know, they do it in a German accent like I did just then. So, what was I going to talk to you about? My book is out, Emergency Questions. Do buy that and do support our sponsor, Beer 52. Second week in a row, no beers have turned up. And beer52.com/Rehlerstappa if you want some free beer. But I'd mentioned in another week that I'm in the Amazon... It's like a quite obscure chart with about four subheadings, and the final one is fun facts and trivia. And I got up as high as, I think I got to number one actually for a very brief time, but I've been fighting against a man called Hugh Jaspern, whose book, 52 Things to Learn on the Loo. I'm not sure it's his real name. I'm not sure. Hugh Jaspern. We agreed to, we'd swap books, and I'd buy his book if he bought my book. Joke's on him. It's only cost five, mine cost $9.95, so. Already up, but, you know, he's only got 52 things in here, and I've got 1,001 in mine. It's a very good, it's, you know, it is better than the name suggests. That's what I'm going to say, and I can see why it always does quite well in the charts. You can learn the two cork release trick on the toilet.
Hold a cork in each hand as shown above. Place the tip of the thumb on the top of the cork in the opposite hand. Using index fingers, reach around, grab corks and pull apart. Show a friend, give them the corks, watch them fail. I mean, you know, I did my best for you, Hugh, but it is no taking a page at random. If you were in hospital, would you prefer to die than be Patch Adams? Not as good as that, is it? So, not as good as that. Not as good as that. So, I'm very much looking forward to our guest this week. He has been on before. I told him backstage he was one of my top three podcasts I've ever done. My favourites is a lie. It was rubbish. It was mainly me that was good. He is probably, come on, Ian Gunpowder. That was me. That was all me. So, he's probably best known as Balloon Man in Teen Titans Go to the Movies. Which is actually quite a big fucking deal. It's Greg Davies! Thank you. Hello. How you doing?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good.
I've just been sitting backstage where it's insufferably hot. And now I'm sweating like the fat prick. I truly am. Nice to be here.
We deliberately ramp it up backstage just to get
people. Yeah, right. It's genuinely uncomfortable, so thank you. You've got new chairs, Rich, since the last time.
A new what?
Chairs.
Yeah, they are nice, aren't they?
Isn't it?
Kickstarter money. It's where it all goes.
It's where it all gets blown.
Look,
lovely.
They're very nice. I was sitting on a very bad chair on last week's podcast. I forgot to mention how awful. All the ladies had these lovely chairs, and I was sat on, if you saw it up close, it was barely a chair.
And we're off.
It looked like... So, Balloon Man.
Yeah.
But this is a big deal, Balloon Man. It sounds like a funny thing, but it's... Is it out in the UK,
Is it a big deal? I don't know.
It's a Hollywood movie.
It's a Hollywood thing, but I think all the kids like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just a... You know, they clearly decided that they wanted it as a tiny bit part, and they just went through the Rolodex of incredibly fat, farting, disgusting old comedians. Yeah. And I got the part, yeah.
But it is...
took me about an hour, and I die within 10 seconds.
Right. Spoilers. It's an animation, though, so you know, they didn't need to get, like, literally a balloon man.
No, they didn't. They obviously thought that it should be genuine, so, yeah. It's just a disgusting fat creature that just farts all the time and then is destroyed within 30 seconds of the film starting. So, big break. But apparently, people like Teen
Titans.
Titans Go.
Yeah. I'm not aware of it. It's too old for my kids. That's the problem. So, I'm more into Waffle the Wonder Dog and
all the classics.
Yeah. He can talk. I forgot to ask about how they got managed to find a talking dog to do that. So it must have been taking a long time. we had such fun backstage.
We'll build up, it's all right.
And
I think it was the chair story.
Yeah, it was good. It was good, the chair story. It'd be better if the chair had been here.
Yeah.
For me to say, it's not
way
as good
better.
As these
chairs. Recounting a chair that no one's seen.
Yeah.
It's a basic, isn't it? I feel like we should try and tell a chair story that is funny, though.
Okay. Have you got a funny chair story?
I was on when I was living in rented accommodation, I was on a small two-seater velour sofa during the day when I should have been teaching children. I'd taken the day off. And God punished me because as I was watching daytime telly, I was just in my pants. I cocked my leg to let out a fart and I fully filled my pants full of shit.
Did Andy go on the chair?
Weirdly, here's the thing. It's a weird thing. Because I am an unashamed brief wearer, none did go on the velour sofa. It could have been awful. And I really remember walking to the toilet. But I think it's unusual, even when you've got a tummy complaint, to go from 0 to 100 miles an hour like that. Normally there would be a sort of, I'm not sure I'm feeling all that well. But not from, I wonder what's on this morning, to just a full payload.
Yeah. When I was at school, it was sort of frowned upon to use the toilets to poo in, right? When you're 7 or 8, you couldn't... If anyone did a poo in the toilet, then people would climb up and laugh at them, and you're meant to poo at
home. There's a boy in my school who still lives in my hometown and who is still called Poo Boy for that very reason. And that is absolutely true. He's the son of the now-dead local news agent.
Right.
Still called Poo Boy. Never shit in a school toilet.
Twice, I'd chat in my pants rather than go to the toilet.
What a fool shit.
And walked home. Like I was in the sick room. I said I was feeling unwell.
Hang on, mate.
And then I sat in the sick room.
Hang on. So you needed a shit.
Yeah.
And you logically, as a child, thought to yourself, I can't risk being embarrassed by my schoolmates. So I'm going to do a full turd.
I was in the sick room because I wasn't feeling very well, so that was part of the reason. And I remember the teacher came in and checked on me every now and again, and once I'd completely pooed myself, they came in, they went, you might as well go home now. I think he'd smelt the poo. I would assume so.
There wasn't a toilet attached to the sick room?
No.
So you just thought, like, I'm going to fully do a shit in
my
pants.
And everyone was in lessons still, so I could have snuck in and used, it would have been one of the tiny toilets from the first years in the middle school.
You know, when I was at primary school, I'm not sure if... What I'm worried about doing this podcast is that I am a middle-aged man now, and I won't remember any of the stories I told last time, so I'm probably going to repeat myself. When I was at primary school...
Your poo stories are so delightful, Greg.
They bear a second listen, don't they? This isn't a... I was in primary school, and I threw a girl's pencil across the classroom in an act of unprovoked spite. And... The head teacher, Mr. Lowe, dead, he saw me throw the pencil across the classroom, and he grabbed me and he picked me up and he put me on the table. And we were like in group tables, so all a little group all sat around one big table dotted around the classroom. And he grabbed me and he went, I saw that boy, and he put me on the table, and just in sheer fear I just pissed myself. And so it was just... I think it's my earliest school memory of me just fully pissing all over a table that my best friends were sitting round, and it all spattering. And it really scared Mr. Lowe. You could see, I wasn't expecting him to piss himself, but he knew he had to style it out. So he sort of went, that's it, you've soiled yourself now. As if, of course, that's what happens. That's what happens if you throw a girl's pants across a classroom. And now you've pissed all over a table. You now must go and change. And they took me away. Anyway, as a consequence of that, for... 25 years I was known as Tabletop in my town throughout my whole secondary school. Now, simultaneously, in another classroom, Miss Lawks's classroom, my friend Stephen Jones had shat himself. I think on the same day. So I became known as Tabletop and he became known as Khaki Ass. And we sort of developed a bond over the years. So I would go past him and go, and he would go, for years.
Yeah.
About 3 years ago, we had a school reunion in a local pub. Like I went to school in 1979. And as I was pulling up to the pub in my car, I thought, that's Khaki. That's Khaki Ass at the cash point outside the pub. And he had his back to me, and I wound my window down, and I went, and I haven't seen him for 30 years. I wound my window down, and I went, and without turning around, he went, incredible. didn't even check it was me. He went, oh, I know that. I know my old foe.
Oh, good. So... I'm trying to do all things that have happened since 2014 when you were last on.
Okay.
A lot of bad stuff's happened.
I haven't pooed myself, but a lot of bad stuff's happened.
Not, yeah. I'm trying to think if I've pooed myself since 2014. Not in any serious way.
just in a loose middle-aged way. Yeah.
Well, we're both in our 50s now, which we went. Are you 50?
I don't know whether I'm in my 50s.
What, you're 50?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're in.
You're
in.
You're not in your 50s, you're, so you're 51, I don't
no,
think.
You're in.
No, I'm 50. There's which a distinction
is, which
there.
Which is one of the 50s. One of the 10-50s.
I don't think it is. I think I think the decades are marked by separate entities, and this is a year of youthful exuberance.
Okay. I'm 51, so I'm definitely in my
50s. Fucking hell.
Well into my 50s.
I'm amazed you haven't shat yourself. Granddad.
You said it, I think you said in your absolutely excellent stand-up special that's on Netflix, You Magnificent Beast.
Thank you, Richard.
What I love about this job is it's my job on a Monday to just watch you doing comedy for an hour. It was very good. So you said, I think you have less to look forward to at 50, or certainly in an interview, maybe if not in the show.
Yeah.
Do you really feel like that? Do you feel like life's ebbing away?
I think it really broadsides you, 50. I think you can't... I can't quite believe it. I was talking to a mate of mine who... And we were literally yesterday, what feels like yesterday, fantasising about what our lives would be like when we were 30.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden it's like, bang!
It is quick.
Fuck! I know it's a cliche, but it is like, what the fuck?
I sort of feel like 30 to 50 is like, you know, like there's that experiment where doctors were sucking out people's hypothalamus to see what would happen.
Yeah.
And then they lost all their memories. I sort of feel like that's what happens.
Yeah, I love it.
And then you've woken up the next day and go, but I'm still 30. That's my long-term memory. So that's quite bad.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
I mean, you have nothing in your life, though. I've got two children. So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, it's true.
You literally have no...
True.
You have nothing.
I had to put all my energy into my career.
And obviously, I would prefer to be doing the stuff you're doing. I have two children, and that's a good consolation prize.
A really good friend of mine said to me the other day, and he was not joking, he was not trying to get a reaction out of me. He said, I think if I had my time, I'd go back now and I wouldn't have the kids. I'd just get a couple of dogs, probably. And I went, what? You mean if you could literally go back in time now, you would erase your children? He goes, yeah, I think so, probably, yeah. Yeah, on balance, I think so, because all they do is complain and look on the internet. I do that voice for all my impressions of all my friends. Yeah. I don't... My Betty mate... lived with me a couple of years ago because you don't need to know this. This is unnecessary detail. He got divorced. Yeah. And we were like two 49-year-old losers. Yeah. But I just fucking loved it. It was like reliving, just going back to being a student. And we lived like students. And we ate curry every day and just got drunk all the time. It was great. And I'm sorry that he's now happy in another relationship. Because... it was such great fun. Anyway, he does talk a bit like that. And I said to him one Sunday, I'm going to go and have a meal with a couple of other mates. Do you want to come? And he went, And I don't know why this makes me laugh so much. And maybe it was all right. He went, I don't see why not, because all I've had to eat today is an individual cherry bakewell and a bowl of... and a bowl of cheese. I mean, what the fuck are you talking about? He said it as if That's what everyone, I mean, you know, everybody, when they're when they've not planned their meals, just settle for that famous British meal, a bowl of cheese. You know, people, everyone has a bowl of cheese. No, they fucking don't. It's a bowl of cheese, yeah. Yeah. Can I tell you another story about
this? Yes, please.
When I... I shouldn't have used his actual name. This is a different mate, actually. It's a different mate who does have the same voice as that guy. His name's Tony. And it was in the 90s when I was teaching.
Yeah.
And there were two really attractive teachers, both of whom I really fancied and was desperately trying to impress. And they were having a... They were having a conversation about how disappointing the male fantasy of two women being together is. They were sort of saying it's just pathetic that that's men's default setting, that they think that, you know, that women are all sort of gorging on each other and whatever, that male fantasy exists. And they were saying it was pathetic and predictable.
Yeah.
And of course, I was trying to impress them, so I was pretending that I find the idea of two women together unappealing as well. So I was going, oh, God, it's just pathetic, isn't it? It's just, is that the best you can do? Just imagining two women being together, God almighty, yeah. And then Tony came in, and he came in, it was break time, and he went, all right. And we went, all right, Tony. And he goes, what are you talking about? And one of the girls went, oh, we're just talking about them, you know, the male fantasy of two women being together. And before she could say anything else, he went, oh, my God. Oh, my God. The thought of you two... Let me tell you the whole quote, it's astounding. The thought of you two tender chickens... pecking away at each other is more than I can bear. Pecking away at each other. It's offensive. It's offensive on so many levels. Tender. Oh, God, yeah. Oh, God, they were a bit frosty, weren't they?
Oh.
Frosty girls.
I think I was interested about your stand-up, and like as a 49-50-year-old man as you're doing this show, is that your glee is still, your childish glee is still there. With my, I've done a show about turning 40 and a show about turning 50, and they're both sort of a little bit... The 41 more so than the 51, really, about going, oh, God, can I carry on being childish and
yeah.
I'm going to, you know, is it the end because I'm too old? You don't seem to have those same concerns.
No, I don't.
It's just the sort of celebration of silliness.
Much to the detriment of my personal life. But I think I am... you know, it's well documented. I grew up in a house with a sensationally childish father.
Yes.
So I think the die was cast, yeah. But yeah, of course, we're all just, you know, we're all going to die soon, aren't we?
Yeah.
May as well be silly while we can.
It is. I mean, it's incredibly funny. It genuinely is a such funny show. And there's no, I mean, there's a little bit, because there's a little bit about your dad, so there's a little bit of, like, a soup song of, like, emotion in there. But
yeah.
It's always undercut, really. It's just great. You know, there's so many stand-up specials and stand-ups doing this worthy and serious and doing dead dad shows that are like, you know,
yeah,
my dad died. But, you know, but it's so much fun just to see someone being silly and
but I think
fun.
That's fine if that's what if you need to get it off your chest in a public forum, that's fine, but I choose not to be sad on stage. But I think it's okay if that's a good way of you dealing with it. But you know, I only mentioned the thing I love about stand-up is that you're in absolute control of what you release.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would mention that he's died, but only because I want to say a funny thing that he.
Yeah.
It's a way into.
Yeah, but you know, but it's interesting.
Saying
something
something
like,
that, well, but, joyous about him.
Sure. I mean, yeah. It's still a lovely. It's a lovely tribute for that because that's the kind of man he obviously was as well.
Yeah.
And but you know, critically. I guess, you know, I don't think I've laughed at, you know, many stand-up shows as much as I laughed at your one, but, you know, critically people will go, you know, oh, where's the depth to it all, and, you know,
well,
they
there.
Might.
It's there. It is just, there. They just need to look a bit fucking up.
You got quite a good review from Brian Logan in The Guardian. I don't know if you read your reviews, but...
I read that one, yeah.
It
was a 4-star that read like a 1.
Yeah. He's such a...
4 begrudging stars.
He's such a sniffy... I mean, he's the archetypal reviewer who wants every stand-up show to be what he would do if he was doing a stand-up
show,
which is a political stand-up show, basically.
I don't know, you know. I mean, he gave me 4 stars, so he must be all right.
Yeah. He gave me 4 stars as well after he nearly... I nearly got him sacked from The Guardian, so he had to. So it's a long story. But he does mention in that review, I think, a routine that is, at least isn't in the Netflix live show. Is the Netflix live show shorter than the...
Yeah, I had
show?
To chop it down to an hour, yeah. I don't know why they like
Because he
that.
Mentions a routine about Dr. Dick Lifter.
Dr. Dick Lifter.
I don't think that's in the Netflix special.
Did I take that out?
I think so. I don't know. I might.
Well, that's like most of it, it's just 100% true.
Yeah.
Do you want me to tell it?
Yeah, I mean, I was interested to know, but I had a massage guy who wants to touch my penis a lot.
I mean, it is on the surface a genuine story of awful sexual assault. I had to go for a medical. When you do any kind of tele project, you have to go for a standard medical. And in my opinion, it's largely a pointless exercise. It's so that they can say you've been sent for a medical. And you normally get sent to one particular doctor in, what's it called? Harley Street.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Who's lovely, but largely just says, how are you? Are you all right? And then he talks about his son for about 10 minutes. And then you leave after he listens to your heart. But then I got sent for this one show to a different doctor I'd never met. And he and I have a massive fear of authority. Some of my friends called me FOA because anyone in any position of authority, I'll do whatever they say.
Yeah.
He went, "Yeah, you were quick medical, are we?" And he was about 70. He goes, "Let's have a little look at you." But pop behind the old screen and pop your clothes off. And I went, "Oh, I didn't have to. I don't normally have to take it." Yeah, if you could pop your clothes off, that would be good. So I just did it straight away, down to my pants. And he came in and he tapped my knee like that, because that's really important. Then he listened to my heart. Then he took my blood pressure. And then, just with no warning whatsoever, he just took my pants and went whoop, whoop. And I went, because I wasn't expecting someone to expose my penis.
Yeah.
And then... this is my face, he was talking to me, and he just took hold of the tip of my penis and lifted it 2 inches in the air so it was upright, and then he just carried on going, how long are you filming for? Lovely, must be quite the life. Quite the life being an actor. And he held it for about, I worked out because there was a clock behind you. I worked out he held my penis upright for 3 minutes while he was talking to me, and then he popped it down. And I went home and went, I don't think that's a medical thing. I can't think of any reason why to make you sure you're fit for filming that you have to have your penis lifted 3 inches in the air and held by a 70-year-old man. And it sort of troubled me. I mean, he didn't do anything with it. He just held it. And then I went on set, and I saw the director, who's about 10 years younger than me, and buff, and much better looking. And I went, do you have to go for the medical, for the thing? He goes, yeah, I did. And I could see he was a bit shifty, and I went, was it... Was that all right? That pan out all right? He went, yeah, no, it's fine. And I went, did anything strange happen? He goes, actually, yes. Something did happen. He, he grabbed my dick and he lifted it in the air. And I went, right! He did the same to me! He goes, I know, oh, thank God, it's weird. It's weird, right? I said, it's fucking weird. And this is absolutely true. He goes, honestly, God, it's the longest 5 minutes of my life. And I was genuinely furious. He held his dick for longer.
Maybe he was timing like he was boiling an egg or something and he needed to time it. Yes, no, you saw it was hard-boiled for the other guy.
So the lifting of my dick was incidental?
That was just the way he did it.
But my dick doesn't keep time, Richard.
But maybe to him it's something. Maybe he's counting the your pulse or something. You get.
That's why he took my pulse. That's why he listened to my heart first to make sure. To make sure that my heart was keeping perfect time. Yeah. And then in order to boil his egg, he was able to feel my pulse through my lifted penis.
Yes.
Of course! Of course.
Oh, dear. Good. I don't know why that didn't make it onto the Netflix special. That's good. So, I think what is interesting, you talk about your dad and your dad making up lots of stories for you and playing tricks on you, making stuff up.
Yeah.
Which sort of makes me wonder, because a lot of things you talk about in your show are mildly unbelievable.
They're not, but they are true.
Well, but that's what your dad would say. Are you carrying the torch?
But they are. They are.
Yeah.
But that's what I find funny. And I think that is, you know, when lots of comedians are trying to find the truth in their comedy. I literally find things that genuinely happened the funniest.
Yeah.
And the only thing I'm guilty of is merging stories and, you know, messing around with timelines. But the starting point, the thing that's made me laugh,
yep,
normally happened, yeah.
You would say that, wouldn't you?
No, but it's true.
If you're a big liar, you would say
it's true.
When I met you, we were talking about Rick, and you had just the first series of Mandan, I think, when we last talked on here.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, that same year, we'd lost Rick, and you also lost your dad as well.
Yeah.
That was a pretty...
Within 2 months, I think, is a double dad death.
Yeah.
Impressive. Impressive to lose a fictitious dad and a real dad in 1 year, yeah.
Yeah. How did you cope with it, really? Was it...
It was horrible.
I mean, it was bad enough, me never having met Rick Mayall. The other day I was interviewed for the Young Ones documentary, and I don't cry all the time. I'm crying now. And I told you about it, I cried in the last podcast, but I started talking about Rick Mayall, and I genuinely started crying.
Did you?
In the interview. They only used it, because no one's...
insane man on their program.
there's a lot of me crying on the cutting room floor of Pointless and Rick Mayall Young Ones documentaries. But you've been working with him, and he was such a big part of that show. And I think
and it was a lifetime ambition for me.
Course,
I never thought I would ever work with him or meet him or have anything. And then I'm being invited around to his house for tea and planning shows, and it was terribly, terribly sad. But the reason it was sad for me is because he was still, he had that awful accident in the 90s and was clearly affected by that. It had an ongoing effect on him because that almost killed him. But he was dead for 5 days. I think he loved that. Telling people that.
Yeah.
I heard him tell that story at least 3 times because he was dead for longer than Christ was. But it was dreadful. The reason I didn't know him well, there's no point in me pretending that we were best friends. You know, we worked on one series of a thing together.
Yeah.
But it was terribly sad for me because he was so full of being still, and he wasn't old, he was only mid-50s. And same sort of age as you.
Yeah. And I'd be popping off any minute. I could be popping off.
And he was just so enthusiastic and full of life. And, there was no sort of complacency on set. He just wanted to be as funny as possible and as mad as possible.
So was it a difficult decision to carry on with Man Down, or was that?
No, that wasn't. Yeah. That wasn't difficult because The easy decision was not to replace him. That was we were never not going to carry on with it, but the only thing that could have been tricky is, do you try and get someone to play that father role? And, I mean, I decided that in about 10 seconds, there's no point. It's ridiculous, isn't it? Well, who would say yes?
Yeah.
Do you want to take over from Rick Mayall?
Someone would, and it would be, you know, you see that sitcom where a character's been replaced, even if it's not exactly the same character, and it's always when a major character goes for something. Yeah. But it was very moving that the episode you did was the first one you did was a very moving kind of homage to both.
I hope so.
Your dads.
It was really, it was very hard to write.
Yeah.
It's the hardest thing I've done in this silly business is to write a show about a father dying sort of after my actual dad had died and the character who played my dad had died. It was just about the hardest thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, boo-hoo.
My dad's still alive, so he's eight. Last time I checked, so he's it's great. I've got both of them still alive. It's great.
I'm really pleased for you.
But you joke in the show.
My mum's all right.
Your mum's fine.
Yeah.
You joke in the show about, you know, you're taking so much material from your parents, and so, you know, you're funny about saying your dad dying has screwed that up a bit for you. But was your mum really resistant to you doing something? You still do a lot about your mum
and I just can't get away from it. I try to, because I just did a gig over at the Comedy Store just now, and I said foolishly, I do panic that I might come across on stage as having a sort of Savile-esque relationship. It's gone down just as badly here, interesting. I mean, you know that sort of obsessional, weird middle-aged man talking about his mum still. And so I do genuinely, constantly, that's the only similarity I have with Savile. So I do sort of constantly vow that I'm never going to talk about her again.
Yeah.
And she's happy about that. She's like, good, I think it is time you moved on now and stopped. And here's an example of what then happened. And this happened a few weeks ago. I vowed, since that show, where I once again focus massively on the stupid things she says, I was round at her best mate's house a few weeks ago. We went for drinks because her daughter was visiting. And we're having a glass of wine, and they were talking about what it was like being pregnant with me and with her daughter in the 1960s, what it was like. And there were two things that I remember thinking, don't remember this, don't write it down, you don't talk about her anymore. And she goes, because the first thing she said was, because of course I was absolutely repulsed by pregnancy. And I went, okay. Thank you. She goes, it's disgusting. I couldn't wait to get you out of me. And I went, okay. And then she said, I gave up smoking with you, but I didn't bother with your sister. And I went, okay. Why? She goes, well, isn't it obvious? And I said, no. She goes, well, you're giant, aren't you? And I had I had an awful time giving birth to you, and I'd read in a paper that women who smoke are in danger of giving birth to underdeveloped infants, and I thought that would make it easier for me. I mean, it's incredible, isn't it? So what, you tried to shrink my sister in the womb? What are you, a fucking 17th century witch? So I just can't imagine she's ever going to stop making me laugh. Yeah.
I was thinking about Jimmy Savile's mum the other day.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Difficult wank. When you get older, you've got to take a run-up at it. You need to go dark sometimes. I know.
She didn't do anything wrong. She didn't do anything wrong. You know, he kept like all her clothes in his flat. And he dry cleaned them every year, I think, or something like
that. That's right, yeah.
We don't know why he did that. But do you think...
I'd never even thought...
You know, that, you know...
I think you're being a bit harsh on Jimmy Savile.
Sorry.
To judge him by your dirty standards.
What do you think happened to all of her clothes when he died? Do you think, like, someone's walking around wearing Jimmy Savile's mum's dress? Or do you think they were, like... Because the gravestone got all smashed up and destroyed, didn't it?
Yeah.
Do you think they destroyed? Do you think they got burned?
I don't think there'd be a big market for them.
They might just go to a charity shop, though.
I don't
think
Scope would be advertising.
I just wonder what happened to them. He looked after them so well. So, you are hosting the Royal Variety performance shortly.
Yes, I am.
How's that? How's that going
to be? Trusty, isn't it? It's another thing that I've done for my mum. Right. Yeah. Just in between getting all her clothes dry cleaned.
She's fine if she's alive. I think that's a nice thing if she's alive.
I don't know how that'll be, because I don't, you know, if you've watched even 10 minutes of any of my stand-up shows, you know, it's just absolutely disgusting, unsayable filth. And yeah. I think it's I've done it before. I've done it as a comic,
right.
And it was fine. But it's not my crowd, and now I'm the host, so I don't know. We'll see. You know,
what are you planning on? I mean, you know, don't. What are you going to?
I've got some ideas. I don't know whether they'll work or not in front of that crowd. I don't know. But no, it's not. I can tell you, it's not the Queen. But I don't think I'm allowed to tell you who the royals are for some protocol.
Is it because it's Prince Andrew?
I'm not telling. I don't think I'm allowed to tell you.
Okay. I won't put
it. I don't care. I'll tell you.
Okay.
I'll tell you off stage.
Yeah.
And I'll meet all of you individually. And I'll tell you. I'm just not going to tell you on this.
Okay. I don't want to get into
trouble. No one cares. But I think it'll be nice.
Yeah.
And there's some nice comics on the bill. And it'd be all right, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it should be fun.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know where to start. I mean, it's not likely to happen to me. But
nor do I. We'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exciting.
Yeah,
and you were on Who Do You Think You Are, which is what the only reason I'd like to be as famous as you is so I could go on Who Do You Think You Are.
It's the best thing.
So yeah,
such a shame you won't get to do it.
It is, yeah.
It is the best thing.
And is there loads that doesn't get on the telly?
There is. Do you know what? There's It's disappointing, some of the stuff that doesn't get on the telly.
Yeah.
And even to the extent, and I understand why they have to do it, because they have to edit the complicated stories down.
Yeah.
But I was finding they were cutting whole humans out of the story.
That's right.
There were sort of whole, like, sisters of characters who died in weird circumstances, and they were chopping it out. And they chopped out this amazing thing. We met this expert. You meet these experts on the journey, and we met this expert from a Welsh university who came off script. The producer, understandably, is trying to stick to the story of finding out who my grandmother's dad was, because we as a family have never known, and they found out who her dad was on this bizarre telly programme. But we met this guy, and he was talking about courting techniques in rural Wales at the time, and there was a courting technique known as bundling, and this didn't make it on the show, and it is my favourite thing I learnt on the whole journey. That at that time, because I was saying it would be a scandal for my great-grandmother to be pregnant out of wedlock, surely. And no, my great-great-grandmother to be pregnant out of wedlock. And he said, no, it wouldn't have been. It only became a scandal sort of early 1900s.
Right.
In the late 1800s, there was nothing scandalous about getting pregnant out of wedlock in rural Wales, because there was a technique called bundling where, and this was widely practiced, where a young man would go to a farm and sneak into one of the daughter's bedrooms and have sex with her. And then if she got pregnant, he knew that he'd got a good one there. And then they would get married.
Right.
Because there was no point in marrying a woman unless she could give him loads of kids to right. work on his remote farm, where they'd all be really unhappy and want to kill themselves.
And when they're going and bundling, it's with people that want to be bundled, though, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because it just sounded a little bit rapey the way you described it. Which is why I think... why I think everyone's gone a bit quiet.
It's gone a bit quiet. And I did think, this is an interesting story, you fucking assholes. No. Sorry, I should make it very clear that the daughter of the family would open the door and welcome the young man in. The thing I found most interesting about the whole story was it was totally okay to rape people. In the 1800s. Have you noticed the voice I'm using, Leo? Yeah. So there was nothing scandalous in rural Wales about getting knocked up in the late 1800s.
Right.
And it was the government who decided... I've seen the government paper that basically said all these fucking farmers are all... They're all banging each other and having a great time. Getting pregnant. We've got to get them into church.
One of your ancestors is a ghost as well.
What do you mean?
One of your ancestors is a ghost. One of your ancestors died in like a car accident or something. What was
it?
Yeah. And then people have said he haunts it.
He haunts the valley, yeah. Yeah. Of course he doesn't, because ghosts don't exist. But the locals seem to think that my great-great-grandfather still marches around the valley, yeah.
Yeah. Well, why would they think if it isn't true?
Oh, it must be then.
It'd be good to have an ancestor who was a ghost. I just thought they would try and film you with the ghost.
Mm.
Did they spend any time doing that? Trying to film you?
No, they didn't. They didn't try and film me with a ghost, Rich.
Okay. That's why I'm not the producer of Who Do You Think You Are, I guess. Because I'd have spent most of the budget on that. You waited a night in that valley. Come on, if we get this, and you can go, well, hey, what was it like being... What? It was a bit of a rum and money, that guy.
See for yourself. There he is.
Who do you are?
Where do you think that came from? That all ghosts go...
They're not happy about being ghosts, are they?
I
reckon I'd be quite happy about it, because you go, it's a bit extra time, isn't it? Better than being dead. I'd be going... I'd be the thumbs-up ghost.
Wuthering Heights would have been a very different story with you as the ghost. Heathcliff. Luinda.
Kathy! It's all right. It's all right.
Can I come in? With your consent.
This is an emergency question that I've noticed. I was in the Daily Express. It's asked in the Daily Express. It's exclusively asked to women, and I find that sexist, so I'm going to ask it to my male guests from now on.
Okay, good.
This is the Daily Express's...
Hope it's about my vagina.
Daily Express's... Daily Express's question, what's your beauty secret? Men don't get asked this question ever. You're a very sexy man. Women like you. I've read British Comedy Guide, not the British Comedy Guide, British Dirty Britcom Confessions.
Yeah, yeah.
There's more up.
Oh, there are three mentally deranged women posts directly on there.
There's one that all are very much about wanting to be on Taskmaster and you are asking for tasks and the rewards of taking your clothes off and then having sex in front of the studio audience whilst being filmed and looking at yourself on a big screen. That's a new one.
That's what I want.
that's what the... I'm guessing young lady, but, you know, maybe a young man.
Oh.
Do you have a beauty secret? Do you have a regime?
Yeah, I suppose the one... the one vain thing I do that I'm amazed I'm admitting to is that I put a little bit of dye in my beard.
Okay.
Yeah. There was a man over in my park who runs the local cafe who said, and this is just genuinely how he talks, he went, no, no, no. And I went, what? He goes, this, no. And I went, oh, you don't like it? He goes, no, you look 100 years of age. You've got to draw some Just for Men through that. So I do draw a little bit through the sides to stop me looking like Santa. And that's the only thing I do. Yeah.
You look like Tim Allen halfway to transitioning to Santa, though, in the Santa Claus.
Thanks.
That's all right. He's a handsome man. He's a good-looking man. I didn't expect that question to get, like, such a revelation. That'll be in the Daily Express. Once this comes out, yeah. That'll be the front page.
I can't really tell, but if I don't put a little bit in, it's just totally white, and it just makes me look 65, so...
Okay.
Yeah.
This is all natural. My one.
Is it?
Yeah. This is all naturally.
I'd never go full Noel Edmonds, but I don't think there's any shame in taking the edge off it.
No. Can you be sure? Because surely Noel Edmonds never thought he would go. Like with Noel Edmonds, it was quite subtle, and then suddenly one week on Deal, it just went like he was a.
Just looked like children's felt all of a sudden. Because it's an act of madness. To look in the mirror and go, I think we'll get away with that.
You won't, Noel. You won't. What do you think the production team did then? He turned up like that because they wouldn't have been able to.
I think they're too busy looking in the mirror and going, oh, God. I thought I'd be doing films by now.
Right, here is an emergency question.
It's hot as fuck in here, isn't it? Is it? No. Oh, no. The old heart.
If during this interview, we'll put it out as a tribute to you, including your death and death rattle.
Thanks.
And I'll be laughing for a bit because I'll think you're joking, and then we'll go. But then I'll pull a serious face at the end when I know. So I'll go,
you do a show about it?
Yeah, do a show. It might be my step up to the big time. Mike Gunn, who do you think you are? The man who murdered Greg Davies.
Right.
Through laughter. What the fuck is this? What's the most impressive? I don't even understand this question. I'm going to ask it to you. I wrote it. What's the most impressive place that you have revealed your naked?
Is that gone to print?
Yeah. Doesn't make sense.
Fucking hell. Is it self-published, that? Is it self-published?
What's the most impressive? No, it's gone through a proper publisher. Someone's proofread that and gone, yep. What's the most impressive place that you've revealed your naked? Not where you've been naked.
Where I've revealed my naked.
You've revealed. Hey, I'm naked.
I don't think I've ever revealed my naked anywhere impressive.
Okay.
I don't really like being naked. I don't even like looking at myself naked. But I can tell you that the freest I've ever felt naked was on a hillside in Spain. And someone had bought me a caftan, and I went out in the place I was staying very early morning, and my girlfriend at the time was in bed, and it was 6 a.m. in the morning, and I went out in my caftan, and I stood on the side of a mountain, and I lifted my caftan up, and I just urinated off the mountain without touching my penis. And I don't think you've ever done that. No. It is, oh man, it is so liberating. All of the men here, and the women, I guess, it might be a bit more messy, you must go home and try and have a wee with your hands behind your head. It's so freeing.
Yeah.
It's like returning to the wild. So I guess that's the best way I've revealed my naked.
Nice. Usually you've got someone to hold it for you as well, that's the thing, isn't it? So maybe that's what he was up to. Maybe it's just, come on, it's urine. Yeah. It's time for the urine sample.
I needed it lifted by 3 inches.
Okay, here's a question for you, I think. I think you'll like this one. Would you rather be the face of a twin, mostly absorbed in utero, staring out of the stomach of your otherwise regular twin? You'd be able to think independently and talk and pass comments on what they were up to.
Look how pleased you are.
Chat with them when they're lonely, or when you're lonely, or be the prisoner. This is quite near the end of the book. I did the last couple hundred quite quickly.
This is you draining the remains of a bottle of whiskey and going, fuck it. Watching the word count creep up. Fuck it.
Or be the prisoner of a Randy Bigfoot who so far has treated you kindly enough but has a look in his eye. Some of those.
Just distilling those down a bit.
Well, you're either the twin, the mainly absorbed twin of it, someone else in the stomach, I would guess, of, like a bit like they guess Total Recall, that little baby in Total Recall.
Oh, so I'm just a small face within someone else's stomach.
Yeah, but you've got your independent thought.
Would I rather be that?
Yeah.
Or would I rather risk being potentially fucked by a Sasquatch?
Well, a Bigfoot is a different thing, but yeah.
Is a Bigfoot a different thing to a Sasquatch?
Yeah, they come from different regions. That's like saying, you know, an African elephant's the same as an Indian elephant, and they've got different ears.
Okay. What's the key physiological difference between Sasquatch and Bigfoot?
Well, I don't know the whole...
I just want to know whether it's a giant penis.
It's just...
Well, Richard, in answer to your question,
yes.
I would prefer the freedom of moving around and fending for myself, and the small chance that the Bigfoot wouldn't fuck me than being absorbed within someone else's stomach. Okay. So I think that would be my answer, yeah.
There's another question. Would you rather have the living face of your own twin, who you had mostly absorbed in utero, staring out of your stomach?
Yeah.
Who would be able to think independently and talk and pass comment on what you were up to and chat with you when you're lonely?
Yeah.
Or live on top of the pole in the desert for 30 years like Simeon Stylites? So this time, it's just a twin, kind of friendly little...
Yeah,
clock face.
It's all about freedom of movement for me, really, Rich. And I don't want to be trapped in someone else's stomach, and I don't want to live on top of a pole, like David Blaine. So
for 30 years,
I would have a small voice in my stomach.
Okay, in that case.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry, it feels like you've been asked that before.
Yeah.
From the way you're responding quite angrily. Have you got a twin in utero? I've seen your stomach. There's nothing in there. You have a see-through toaster.
Yeah.
Is this what the showbiz life has become?
Alex Horn's really, really jealous of it.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, yeah. Genuinely furious that he wants a see-through toaster, and I can't say that I'm at all excited by it.
So you can see your toast?
You can see it going brown and think, yeah, that's brown enough. But there is a design flaw, because who sits watching? The point of a toaster is it automatically does your toast for you, right? So if you're having to sit watching it go brown, then it's... I'll tell you what it is, Rich.
Yeah.
It's a solution looking for a problem.
Okay. So we should talk about Taskmaster. You are the Taskmaster.
Undeniably.
Yeah. It's a fantastic show. We had little Alex Horn on. He's not that little. He's
6'2", I think.
Yeah, he's quite big.
Yeah.
Compared to me.
And I think he genuinely finds it irritating that people now know him as little Alex Horn. And something that I'm drunk with joy on, any irritation I can cause him.
It's a lovely relationship the two of you have, permeating through those, growing through those many, many series you've done now. How many series have you done? You've done
seven.
Seven, yeah.
Yeah.
And more to come, many more.
Yeah, I would think.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a joy for me, obviously, because Alex does all the work. Yeah. But no, it's one of those things that a lot of telly shows that get made, broadcasters will just give them one series, and if it's not everything they hoped it would be in that one series, then they stop making the programmes. But with Dave and Taskmaster, they just kept going, because I think mine and Alex's little fun thing has genuinely developed as we've gone on.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know Alex at all, really.
No, it's a really nice relationship. I mean, it feels like a relationship that was, that predates that, but
it didn't really, though.
Did you know when you were offered it, did you know? Because obviously getting you on board was a big help for them, because you were,
I don't know, but I was delighted to be offered, and I just...
Could you see the potential immediately, or was it, well, was it obvious?
If I'm honest with you, it was just that Alex did it, and I have been to see Alex's shows, and I think he's really clever and funny, and so I just said yes based on that, if I'm honest. I didn't know whether the show would work or not. Yeah.
Who do you think is the biggest idiot you've had on the show so far as a guest?
I don't think there's been any idiots on it, because it's celebratory.
Phil Wang.
No, I would say that he is the only person I think I've judged far too harshly. I've watched a couple of them back, and I thought, oh no, you've really stitched Wang up there. But it's hard, I'm making the decisions genuinely in the studio and judging people, and it's genuinely quite stressful at times. So I don't always get it.
You don't always get it
right.
Well, you do get it right because you're the taskmaster, but sometimes it feels...
Yeah, like it's grossly unfair.
Do you feel you gave Rod an easier ride because he's your mate?
I certainly did not. And you're not the first person to suggest this. And I'm telling you now, there is no way I want Rod to do well in any aspect of his life. Even if it's on a joke game show, I utterly refute that I was helping him in any way.
That's what someone who was helping him would say.
Yeah, well...
It's a very Trumpian response to that.
I'm furious with myself if that's how it's appeared.
Is there a lot in that show that doesn't make it to the screen? I did ask Alex.
So much.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know whether Alex has meticulously planned the tasks and filmed them, so I don't know that there are many tasks that don't make it to the screen eventually. But in the studio, it's like any of those shows, we just talk for ages.
Yeah.
Yeah. Certainly, we're over 2 hours we record for every time, yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, what a laugh.
It's a very, very enjoyable show.
It's a wonderful show to be part of, yeah.
Yeah, I imagine. That's what I imagine. That's why I sometimes imagine that.
I got Who Do You Think You Are before I even did that.
Did you? That's incredible. Last night, I slept from 10:30 to 5:30.
Yeah.
Didn't get up to go to do a wee. When was the last time that happened?
I genuinely couldn't tell you. And at 11 a.m. tomorrow, I have an appointment with the doctor to talk about my prostate.
Will you give us a ring and let us know how it goes?
I certainly will, yeah.
Little extra at the end.
Give us a ring's unfortunate. Because I have got to have a prostate examination tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I am up at 3:30 day with every night with the middle-aged piss.
Right.
It's a living fucking hell.
Do you have kind of panic attacks? And I've started having sort of panic attacks when I wake up in the middle of the night. My kids sleep through now till about 5:30, 6 o'clock. So, like, I should be able to sleep through the night. But I often, like, wake up about 2:30, having had a weird dream, and then feeling really uncomfortable and not knowing why. And I can't turn the lights out and have to go and walk downstairs and have a light on, and I can't sleep for about 2 hours, and then I can sleep again.
No, I don't have any of that.
No, okay. Probably that's the sort of thing that happens in the next year for you. just to warn you. It's really horrible. Because it's like you sort of think, fuck, is this sort of slight sense of fear and dread and not and feeling like you're going a bit crazy, which I am not. Is that what life is going to be? Because as you get older, you know, your brain decays as well, doesn't it? And then you go crazy.
Yeah. My memory of this podcast was far more hopeful.
We were young. We were young men in our mid-40s.
Do you really feel age? Do you find it difficult?
No, I don't. I found 40 harder than 50. I think it's because I've got so much going on. That's maybe the only time I get it is 2 o'clock in the morning. Maybe that's when my existential dread can kick in. I think that's all it is. I've had it for a bit, but it's sort of happened. It happens when I've drunk a bit too much and had chili too late in the day.
So it's nothing to do with age.
It's to do with your terrible
diet.
I used to be able to get drunk and eat chili late at night and still be able to sleep. And now,
what I find about drinking now as a middle-aged man is that if I get drunk, I have 48 hours of absolute depression. Do you?
You're definitely. It's a knock. It's a knock.
Yeah. It's all literally awful.
Yeah. This podcast is sponsored by beer52.com. beer52.com/RHLSTB if you want 8 free beers and to feel terrible after drinking them for dying.
Come on, Rich.
I like being
on. Pull this back, mate.
It's going to be fun. I got a round of applause for sleeping through the night without doing a wee. They love us.
That's good, yeah.
Yeah, well done. That's the worst thing that's ever happened to me. Oh, well done. But I genuinely cannot remember the last time I didn't have to get up at 2:30 to do a wee. And I'd had a beer and everything.
That's great. Well, I'm really pleased for you.
Thank you. It was good. Are you ever mistaken for Greg Davis, the children law specialist?
No.
Do you think he's ever mistaken for you?
No.
Do you think anyone ever rings up and goes, oh, I don't think I want you to do my children's law specialist?
No.
I saw you interviewed saying that you still love touring and you still enjoy it.
Yeah, I really do. I think it's a really great thing to do with your life. Why wouldn't you like it? Why do any comics ever moan about it?
Because
you get
hard.
Driven to a town and talk shit for an hour to people who've paid to see you. Shut up. It's a great thing to do. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I, as long as people want to do it, you know, see it, I will, yeah, I think it's great.
I think, but so much of your comedy depends on you enjoying yourself as well, don't you think? So, like, some people can be grumpy and... You're not a grumpy performer in any way, are you?
No.
So
no,
if you don't, if you're not enjoying the stage time, I'm not sure that show would work in the same way as it does.
No, I would agree. The material is flimsy at best.
No, I don't think the material is good, but I think so much of it is your glee. It's your childish glee at what you're doing.
Yeah,
and it doesn't feel like you could really. I mean, there's a fakery in all forms.
But even if you're a dour comedian and you don't jump around gleefully, still touring is an amazing gift, isn't it? A wonderful thing to do.
It is.
You still tour? Do you not love it still?
I do, but I find, again, when you got to, since I've had a family at home, that's the thing.
Oh, yeah, all right. Well, I can still have kids.
Yeah. Are you going to have kids?
I doubt it. Jesus Christ.
I feel you'd be a good dad.
Thanks, Rich.
But you say you hate children.
I don't hate children at all. I've got two nieces, and yeah. I love them. They're great. I've probably told you what my nieces said to me a couple of years ago. I walked into the dining room, and they're 8 and 10 now, so they were 6 and 8 at the time. And as soon as I walked in, the older niece went, "We're not allowed to talk about how big your belly is anymore." And the younger one, Daisy, came out from behind her and went, "But you are fat."
Oh, that's lovely. They are good. And I was going to talk to you. The last time we saw each other was at Buckingham Palace.
Yeah.
That was a strange evening.
Just the weirdest. And walking in and seeing, I was already weirded out by being invited, and then I walked in and saw you. I walked into a room and saw Benedict Cumberbatch, Stephen Hawking, and then you. I can't imagine why I've been invited. I can't remember what this is. I think maybe I've dreamt this. It was weird, though. Wasn't
it was weird. Well, it was a dinner for motor neuron disease.
Yeah.
And I've never done anything.
You were a total imposter.
And I think there should be more motor neuron disease, not less. It was very difficult for me. I had to eat the food. I feel like a little bit of a hypocrite.
I had two really surreal moments.
Yeah.
One is, the reason I've been invited is because I'd done a gig and I'd given the proceeds to motor neuron disease. And the guy went round and introduced us all and said what we'd done. And he said you'd raised loads of money, but you hadn't raised anything.
For Scope, I'd raised loads of money for a different
Scope,
charity.
Nothing to do with motor neuron.
I got invited very late on. The guy who worked at the charity used to work at Scope. That was it.
Right. Okay, so you were a total imposter. I'd done a gig, and when they introduced me, he said the organiser said, "And this is Greg Davis, who's raised many thousands of pounds for motor neuron." And later on, there were two weird things that happened to me. Later on, Susanna Reid quite aggressively questioned me over the top of Stephen Hawking about how many thousands of pounds I'd raised. She went, "You've raised thousands of pounds." Hawking was, RIP, was between us. Yeah. She went, "You've raised thousands of pounds, have you?" And I went, yeah. She went, "How many thousands of pounds?" And I went, "Oh, I don't know. I can't remember." And then, 5 minutes later, Benedict Cumberbatch, whose wife was heavily pregnant, swept out of the room, and my mum, who was obviously there because I'm obsessed with her, my mum went, "Oh, no, oh, Benedict Cumberbatch has left. I really wanted to meet him." And Judge Rinder... stuck on making this shit up, isn't it? Judge Rinder turned around and went, "You want to meet him? You're going to meet him." And he ran across the room, past Hawking and Reed. Sorry, past Stephen Hawking and Susanna Reed and the other strange collection of people, Princess Anne.
Princess Anne was there.
And quite aggressively grabbed Benedict Cumberbatch by the arm. He was escorting his pregnant wife out and dragged him back into the room and so he could meet my mum. Cumberbatch just going, "Okay, well, yeah, so you can let go of my arm, George Rinder. It's nice to meet you, old lady. Old lady of a comedian, I don't know. No, I'm going to take my pregnant wife home if you don't mind." Great night, though, wasn't it?
It was good.
Who else was there?
We were sat next to Nick Knowles' wife, but Nick Knowles wasn't there.
Nick Knowles didn't make it. You fucking hell, Knowles, you can't do that. You can't go, "Well, it's a very generous offer. I'll be sending my wife."
We were definitely at the bad end, the rubbish end of the table.
Oh, God, they got us well away from Princess Anne.
They did.
Well,
no one near Princess Anne, no one near Stephen Hawking's.
Well, they can't avoid me this time. I'm hosting the fucking room.
So, is there going to be more Man Down?
I don't know, actually. I don't know. There's a possibility there might be more Man Down, but I'm more inclined to possibly do something else.
So you're writing something else that you're not going to be in?
I'm writing... two things,
right.
One of which I won't be in, and one of which I will be in more than anyone else.
Right.
That's my plan. But yeah. There is a route where Man Down might reappear, but at the moment I'm going to try and do this other thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Any clues?
About the thing?
Yeah.
It's just another silly old comedy. Yeah. No, I won't tell you the idea, because no. I haven't got it away yet, and it'd just be embarrassing.
Yeah.
It'll just be... Oh, yeah, remember that shit idea he said on the podcast that we've never seen?
I do all mine on here, and none of them get made.
Do they not?
Yeah, but it gives them a little
that's
life.
Why I'm not making that mistake.
Gives them a tiny life.
Well, I've got a thing I'm looking forward to. I hope that comes off. Yeah.
Oh, well, I hope that... Well, it'd be nice to see more Man Down. It's a just really silly and fun...
Thanks, Rich.
...sitcom.
And yeah, and like, they're right brilliant gang of people.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were a really nice group, and I hope... somewhere in the future, maybe there will be something else. Yeah,
yeah.
We'll see.
Let's just take a random emergency question and let's see if it works or not. What is the best thing you've ever bounced on?
I don't think that... I mean, I had a space hopper. I guess that's it.
I had a
very rare blue space hopper.
Oh, blue?
Yeah, that was bigger than the orange ones because I was an outsized child. So they sourced a blue space hopper for me. I guess that's the most thing I've bounced. I imagine you'll want me to... That look on your face is just sexual innuendo. You're the only person I know who can do sexual innuendo without saying anything. just by having your face.
Did you ever fuck your big blue space hopper?
No. Just the bear.
That'd be a one-off time if you fucked a space. I mean, what a one-time. You could do it in the blowhole. The blowing up hole of the space hopper.
Yeah, they were tiny, though.
Well, you'd have to extend it a little bit.
What have you... It's what anyone who's seen my stand-up show knows that I fornicated with my teddy bear as a child.
I mean, it was a big teddy bear, though.
It was 5 foot tall.
It was like a grown-up teddy bear. It wasn't a child teddy bear.
No, it was 5 foot tall, and it was tall intents and purposes, real. And I fucked it real good. But let me ask you this. When you were going through your teenage years, what did you have sex with?
Well, not, surprisingly, not very much.
All boys had sex with something.
I think the most I did, I was very, I would have counted that as losing my virginity, having sex with a teddy bear.
Yeah.
And I would have then been disappointed. I was a very good boy. There was a condom machine in... That's worse than it is. There was a condom machine in the local pub that we went to when we were 14.
You fucked that?
No. If you twisted it a certain way, free condoms came out.
Okay.
And then sometimes free money. And we worked out this for a glorious period of about 2 weeks. We'd go in there and like a couple of quid would come out and we'd get 4 or 5 packets of condoms. I wasn't going to have sex for 5 more years. These condoms would have been out of date by the time I ever got a chance to use them. But I had a stash of condoms. Like, God, if my parents had ever found those hidden, they'd think, what the fuck is going on? I had like 5 or 6 packs of condoms. And I used to have a posh wank every now and again into one of them. That was it.
Do you not find that your hands smelt afterwards, though?
Yeah, yeah. And I flushed them down the toilet, which is a big mistake, isn't it?
That's it.
Well, because they can blow up in the sewers and block the toilets. They can expand. Yeah, don't flush them down the toilet.
I didn't know that. I thought that was standard practice. I'll tell you this.
Yeah.
When I was a young man, me and a friend who I won't name. It wasn't a bowl of cheese. It was a different friend. When we were sort of very early, like 12, 13. And we were looking at a racy magazine. And yeah. He was staying over at my mum's. And we were looking at a racy magazine together, and it sort of became an unspoken agreement after we'd looked at the saucy magazine that when the lights went off, we would pleasure ourselves.
Yeah.
And so I did and finished.
Yeah.
And then I was lying there in the dark and... I left it like about 5-10 minutes and I went, oh dear. I'm like, oh dear. Oh dear. Yeah, you alright? You alright? And I just heard this, not finished. And then I had to just lie there and I could hear. I could hear every awful
not finished.
So horrible, isn't it? I've got a story I want to tell you.
Yeah, go.
I don't think it's funny, but I think it's the hardest. I think it's the hardest I've ever laughed. When I was teaching, the school I taught at had this idea of inviting all of the teachers and the heads over from a neighbouring school so we could share good practice, which is fucking horseshit. Who fucking cares? Just teach the children. Shut up. And it was in our own time. It was this awful. So I was with a friend. We were both heads of department. We were with a friend at the back. And he had... I'm starting the story. I don't think it's funny. So we had like 50 members, all heads of department, and the governors, and the two heads from the schools, and it was all sort of, yeah, well, good practice at our school is we do this. And I just wanted to kill myself. And I noticed that there was a woman in my friend's department who had one of those flask mugs that you just have a sip of, and then you can close them to keep your coffee hot. And she was mad, and I was watching her opening and closing a little thing, and there were tears of boredom running down my face. And I looked over at one of the guys from the other school, and he had a watch on, like a really big metal watch, and it looked like a cross-section of her flask mug. And I just wrote my friend a note saying, looks like these two cunts have been shopping in the same place. And I gave it to him, and he went... And then we carried on listening. And then he just noticed. He noticed the flask mug and the guy's watch. and he just went. And it was a room, it was like this. It was a room with at least 50 to 100 people in it, all listening to someone at the front going, yes, well, you know, the best thing we can do is to look at the way our curriculums reflect the needs of the children. And my mate just went, woo! Over the fucking cross section of the watch. And everyone went quiet, and the guy who was talking at the front went, is there a problem back there? And he just carried on. That's that story.
That's it. That's a good one.
It was really delicious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We did. I did. Talkie Cop was my stage show, was translated into loads of different languages.
Yeah.
And like some of them did like very faithful adaptations, and some of them just wrote their own show. And so you went, why have you paid? You know, I don't own the rights to jokes about penises. That's right. It. And so we went to like one place. I think I went with my director to Denmark or something like that. And this guy had completely changed the show. And it was all, we're just going to see your own show in lots of languages you didn't understand. And it was all like songs, parody songs of Eminem and stuff like that. You know, it was just so far away from what I was doing. And then there was a really, he put us right on the front row. So he was looking at
it. If you want to have a go at comedy, mate, have a go at your convictions.
So he puts right in the front row, so we're having to sit there. What, and like, I was just like, this is kind of insulting. You've brought me to Denmark to watch not my show being done in a foreign language I can't understand anyway. And you know, he kept on smiling over at me and stuff. And then he started doing like a really serious, suddenly went, the mood changed. It was really serious. And he started singing something to the tune of Send in the Clowns. And me and my director just, we're just killing, just like everyone was crying up, and we were just, and we were just, and then the womanist was just, the more we couldn't laugh, the more we were just, and it was basically, it was a song about date rape.
Oh, it's funny now.
It's just these two guys who had laughed at anything in the whole show. We're just like trying to stop themselves laughing. And it was so like against what the show was. The show was like this celebration of men and women and working together. So he put this fucking song about date rape, which didn't fit anyway. It was so painful. You know, like when you just say it's so painful.
Oh, yeah. I remember when I was teaching my friend, and it is a bowl of cheese. We were at the Christmas what's it called? The, you know, Christmas service.
Okay, yeah.
The carol service.
Yeah, carol service.
And we'd spent the whole time in the hymns underlining certain parts of words to make like knob and dick and stuff. And we were crying with laughter. And then later I came out and I saw him bollocking a child. And he was going, how dare you? How dare you come into the house of God and disrespect messing around? And he had a hymn sheet in his hand with dick underlined. Oh, it's really bad what teachers do.
Right, well, fuck this.
There's enough in there, isn't there?
I think there is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just leave it then, shall we? Yeah.
It's been lovely to have you back, Greg.
Thank you, Richard.
You're welcome.
Lovely to be
absolutely
here.
Any time. Do check out Netflix, You Magnificent Beast, which he is. You see his tummy in it, it's nice.
Yeah,
you're a very nice, sexy man. Even though you're 50, I'm not, you know. That's what
you're not ruling out.
I'm not ruling out at the moment. My wife's in the audience. She won't mind. Is it cheating to have sex with Greg Davies? I'm not sure it is. I just wanted to do it so at some point I can say, I haven't finished.
Ladies and gentlemen, Greg Davies. You have been listening to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Greg Davies. The music's by Pess. Thank you to everyone at GoFasterStripe.com. Buy all your DVDs and books and comedy stuff there. It's great. Thanks to everyone at the Square Theatre. Go to their website and buy tickets to see all their shows. Thanks to everyone at the British Comedy Guide. They've got lots of podcasts. Check them out. They're good. I'm indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. Thank you to our executive producer, Pete Knowles. Fantastic work, Pete, this week. You knocked the socks off all the other executive producers. This is a GoFasterStripe, Sky Potato and Fuzz production. Goodbye.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Thanks for listening. Do come and see me on tour. RichardHerring.com/gigs is the easiest way to find out where I'm going. And GoFasterStripe.com, you can buy books and downloads. And just tell your friends about the podcast. If you can't make it to the tour show, if you don't want to buy any products, then every time you listen to an advert, you're helping us make more podcasts with a very, very tiny micro payment. So thank you very much for that. I love you all. It's lovely to meet you on tour, by the way. Hello to everyone who's said hello so far. I do come and say hello after the show. If you enjoyed it, if you want to see me, that'd be nice. You can get a selfie. I don't care. I'm a selfie whore. All right, see you soon.